Okay, good morning. So last week, we kind of touched on the Rambam mentioning this distinction of between Chukim and Mishpatim. In chapter 26, in the third Chelek of Mor Nevuchim, on page 310 in our Friedlander translation, the Rambam writes as follows. He says, in the middle of the paragraph on page 310, a little bit towards the bottom, he says, consequently, there is a cause for every commandment. Every positive or negative precept serves as a useful object. In some cases, the usefulness is evident. The prohibition of, for example, the prohibition of murder and theft. In others, the usefulness is not so evident. For example, the prohibitions of enjoying the fruit of a tree in the first 3 years, or of a vineyard in which other seeds have been growing. These commandments, which object is generally evident, are called judgments, and those whose object is not generally clear are called ordinances, or as we call them, mishpatim and chukim, respectively. Thus, they say, in reference to the words of Moses, "Ki lo davar reik hu michem," it is not vain, and if it is, and Chazal say, it is not in vain, and if it is in vain, it is only through you. That is to say, and this is the key line, about five lines from the bottom of the page on page 310, the giving of these commandments is not a vain thing, and without any useful object. And if it appears to you in any commandment, it is owing to the deficiency in your comprehension. Okay, so the Rambam says, essentially, this statement of the Rambam, to me, really, when I first read it, it changed the way that I looked at this distinction between Chukim and Mishpatim. The Rambam is essentially saying that Chukim and Mishpatim are relative categories. There's no such thing, necessarily, as an absolute Chuk, a mitzvah for which there is no reason. Right? There are simply mitzvahs for which reasons are more difficult to understand. Or in the Rambam's words here, generally evident or not generally evident. Right? Things that are known, let's say, amongst most people, or things that are maybe known again amongst fewer people. But not that they can't be known, not that they're not known at all. But are there any exceptions in the Rambam? But yeah, you had a question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Do most of portion agree with him? People say there are mitzvahs.
So the question was, are there Rishonim who disagree with the Rambam in the sense, is there anyone who thinks that yes, there are indeed some mitzvahs which are objectively considered a chok, and really have no reason? So I think we mentioned last week, Rashi seems to imply that. If you look in Rashi on the, it's on the previous source sheet, but Rashi on the Mishnah in Brachos, regarding when the Mishnah said, Ha'omer al-kansi por yagiu rachamecha mishat kinoto, so Rashi said, I think he said, gzerot ha-melechem ve'ein bahem tam. Right? There is no reason. Actually, there was Rashi in this week's Parsha as well that we read yesterday. It's there a Chumash. Let me just grab it quickly.
Yeah, here's a couple.
We need one for tomorrow.
There are enough source sheets? I apologize if there aren't enough. But just to get back to Matt's question, I actually noticed in yesterday's parsha there was a Rashi that was very relevant to us. Hashem tells Yitzchak, he says to Yitzchak, I will give you the same bracha I gave to Abraham. Why? Ekev asher shema Avraham bekoli vayeshmor mishmarti mitzvotai chukotai v'toratai. Because Abraham kept my mishmar, kept my... Rashi translates that as kind of things that are there to prevent us from what we call siyagim, to prevent us from doing other aveirot. Mitzvotai chukotai v'torotai. Rashi explains, Rashi says, chukotai, dvarim sheyetzer hara v'umot ha'olam meshivim alayhem, kegon achilat chazir v'levishat shatnez. Chukim are the kind of mitzvot that the nations of the world and the yetzer hara questions, makes fun of, for example, eating pork or wearing shatnez, She'ein tam b'davar ela gzerot ha-melech b'chukotav al avadav. Things for which there is no reason, rather they are simply a decree of the king unto his servants. So it seems from Rashi in a couple of places that Rashi really does think, yes, there are some mitzvot for which there is no reason. Certainly Rashi himself thinks there are many mitzvot that we can understand a reason. But the Ramban, in a few of the places, I didn't put it on the source sheet because it was just going to be too much, but the Ramban understands, I think, more like the Rambam. The Ramban understands that really mitzvot, these categories of chukim and mishpatim, are only relative categories. So if that's true, according to the Rambam at least, that they're only relative categories. So what I want to talk about is that do they have any real significance, or is it just semantics? Right? Whether you define something as a chok, or you define something as a mishpat, is there any significance to it? doesn't matter. Or maybe it's just, well, since I understand it, then for me it's a mishpat. For someone else, they may not understand it. For them, it's a chok. But there's no real significance in defining it one for one or another. It's all relative.
It would be significant, so we wouldn't have it in the Torah saying it's one or the other.
Okay, so that's, okay, good, right. So if this distinction appears in Chazal and indeed in the Torah itself, the Torah uses, seems to use those terms as two distinct categories, right, chok and mishpat. So what is the significance? Right, it seems that there is a significance, so we're going to try to uncover what that might be. So if you look on page number one, I apologize, I forgot to number the sources, but it's the first source on the source sheet, so it's not so hard to find. Chazal in the Gemara and Yoma are commenting on the pasuk in Vayikra Yurchet, where they say as follows. It says, Pasuk Gimel, Kimaase Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yeshavtem Ba Lo Ta'asu Chumaase Eretz Kenan Asher Ani Mevi Etchem Shama Lo Ta'asu B'chukotechem Lo Te'lechu. You should not walk in the ways of the Egyptians, meaning this is a prelude to the Parsha of Arayot, of the forbidden sexual relations. Et Mishpati Ta'asu V'et Chukotai Tishmeru L'lechet Bahem Ani Hashem Elokechem U'shmartem Et Chukotai V'et Mishpatai Asher Ya'aseh Otam Ha'adam V'chai Bahem Ani Hashem. You will keep my Chukim and Mishpatim. And this Gemara in Yuma is the source for all that we've been talking about. It appears in a few different iterations in Chazal and Midrashim. I brought the Gemara here for reasons, hopefully, which will become clear. The Gemara says as follows: Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, et mishpatai ta'asu dvarim she'ilmalei lo nechtevu din hu shikatvu. These are the things which, had they not been written, it would have made sense. Right? Justice would have dictated that we would have written the laws ourselves. For example, ve'elu hein, avodah zarah, gilui arayot, ushvichu damim, ve'gezel u'birchat Hashem. Right? Idolatry, illicit sexual relations, murder, theft, cursing God. Right? These are all things which we would think of to write the kind of laws that we would think of to write on our own. We don't need the Torah necessarily to inform us that these are bad things. Hold on just for 1 second. It's interesting, pay attention to the examples that Chazal use, okay? It's going to be very relevant on both sides. I'm sorry?
Could you repeat the example?
The examples, again, are up for things that are mishpatim, avodah zarah, right, idolatry, gilui arayot, sexual relations, illicit sexual relations, shvichut damim, murder, gezel, theft, and birchat Hashem, cursing God. Birchat Hashem, that's a euphemism. I know it means blessing God, literally, but it's a euphemism to mean cursing God. V'yatchu kotai tishmeru, Chukim, Dvarim Shehasatan V'umot Ha'olam Meshivim Aleihem. This is what we just saw Rashi quoted in this past week's Parsha. Things that the Satan and the nations of the world question, Ve'eluhin. The examples are Achilat Chazir, eating pork. Levishat Shatnez, right? Not wearing wool and linen together. Chalitzat Yivama, the process of Chalitza for a woman who is bound to marry the brother of her husband, and if the brother doesn't want, of her dead husband, and if her brother doesn't want to marry her, there's a whole process of chalitza with taking off the shoe and spitting, etc., etc. The taharat mitzora, purifying a mitzora, what we call the leper, although that's a little inaccurate. The seir hamishtalech, right, and the scapegoat on Yom Kippur in the Beit HaMikdash that was sent, thrown off the cliff as a kapara for all of Bnei Israel. Those are the examples of chukim. The Shema Tomar, Maasei Tohuim, and maybe we're going to say these things are kind of frivolous. They have no inner meaning to them. Talmud Lomar, Ani Hashem Chakaktiv, Ve'in Lecha Reshut L'Harher Behen. That's why the Pasuk ends, says Chazal, Ani Hashem. Right? Because who, reminding us, who is the legislator? Right? I am God, therefore you have no right to question them. The example we used last week, like a parent, right, disciplining a child. Right, when the child asks why, the parent says, because I said so. Because I'm your father. Because I'm your mother. Right, so the same thing here. That's the parallel that's being drawn in Chazal. So the example... I'm sorry? Lahaher means literally to have thoughts. To have questionable thoughts about. To question one's mind. In different contexts, lahaher can mean different things. It's really a neutral term. It just means thought. However, in this context, it means to thinking after these mitzvot, to be questioning them in one's mind.
Questioning whether we should do them, or questioning why we do them, what
reasons are, what is... Chazal say, what they're saying here, Shema Tomar Maasei Tohu Heim. Right, the concern is maybe they're going to people think these things are actions which are frivolous. Maasei Tohu, meaningless. They have no order to them.
The Chukim.
Right. The Mishpatim, certainly no one questions. The fact that we need murder, the fact that we have prohibition against stealing, those things, we understand very well why those things are necessary.
I think if you put these 10 items on a page, I think most of us would actually categorize them without even knowing what they are. Right?
Does everyone agree to that?
I think so.
Yeah. We have a dissenting opinion, yeah? What?
Well, many societies do have idol worship, I would have done somewhere. And they...
But you understand that if you believe in one God, that it would be
right.
a problem for you to
right.
to face.
Yeah, it is interesting. One second.
But they claim, well, it's one God.
I understand, but we're Jewish, right. and we believe in one God.
No, I understand that. Right. But he was saying in societies in general.
But the question is, you know, it's interesting. In terms of, let's say, take Avodah Zarah, for example. Right? As Chazal say, things that had the Torah not legislated, we would have written. So what do you mean, had the Torah not legislated? So let's assume, for example... There is no Torah. Right? Let's imagine. So is there necessarily a mandate to believe in one God? Maybe. Right? Where does that mandate come from? Does it come from the fact that the Torah is binding upon us, or does it come from some sort of more objective, moral truth?
Well, so it must mean that. Otherwise, Chazal wouldn't be saying right. that we'd come up with these
yeah.
ideas.
Right. Right. How could Chazal be saying, essentially, that we'd have to come up with idolatry, the prohibition of idolatry, on our own? It must be that belief in one God, which is mutually exclusive of believing in idolatry, that the belief in one God, it falls into the category of objective morality. And this is an interesting question in general, which we're really not going to get so much into, but the question of the existence of objective morality to begin with. Right? Is there a morality that exists objective of independent of the Torah? It's an interesting question. Yeah?
But you have two different things that people ridicule us about. But there are things that, I mean, I would argue that Avodah Zarah may be something that no one would ridicule us about, but not necessarily something that we would have thought about or, you know, with how, you know,
Right. Also, if you look in Jewish history, right, look in Tanakh, is it necessarily true that all generations thought that Avodah Zarah was so obvious?
No, right.
Certainly not. Today... Right, where we don't really have the challenge of Avodah Zarah in Western civilization so much. For us, yes, it's just as obvious as murder and theft and everything else. But in earlier times, and certainly in the time of Tanakh, it wasn't so simple to the Jewish people at all. Right? Certainly, if you look through the Nevi'im, they were kept plenty busy trying to turn the people away from Avodah Zarah. Right? It's not so obvious. Yeah.
As far as Avodah Zarah, Hashem explains straight out in Pshat why he's opposed to having God. You know, he says I'm a jealous God, and he explains why. He makes it really clear why. He doesn't say don't have any gods and leaves it that way. He gives you an explanation.
Right. He does it. Okay. Good. Right. He does explain why. We'll see. Hopefully, in the Rambam, why it is that belief in one God falls into this category. Yeah.
I just think it's interesting that all these things that he calls mishpatim are from the So those are categories that the other nations are not actually commanded ever explicitly, but they're supposed to either know it from tradition from Noah or to come up with on their own. They're categories that we expect all humanity to follow.
That is a good point. That these are all in terms of the examples I'm listed in Mishpatim, they are all Shevet Mitzvot B'nei Noach.
Avodah Zarah.
Yeah. Avodah Zarah, murder, theft, even cursing God, these are all mitzvos that are included in the Shevet Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Okay, so that's an excellent point. Right, so I think Chazal are making the assumption here, and the Rambam is certainly going to continue in this vein, that belief in one God is essential to basic human morality. Okay, and hopefully we're gonna talk a little bit about why. But the Rambam sees an interesting tension inherent in these two concepts, Chukim and Mishpatim. The Rambam, in his introduction to the Perashah Mishnayos, mentioned that it was one of the earlier, in our first year, we mentioned this was one of the earliest works that the Rambam wrote when he was a very young man, originally written in Arabic, and he wrote a Perashah Mishnayos, and in the introduction to Pirkei Avot, otherwise known as the Shmona Prakim, he has, it's eight paragraphs in terms of introducing the ethical maxims of Pirkei Avot, and the Rambam introduces basically what he understands as the underpinnings of morality. And he quotes... It's interesting, if you read the introduction, he says in the introduction that he's going to quote a lot of people, he's going to quote Chazal, he's going to quote philosophers, and he's not going to tell you who he's quoting, purposely, He says, don't think I'm plagiarizing. I'm purposely leaving out who I'm quoting because I want you to just simply accept the truth for what it is, not because of who said it. Okay, that's what the Rambam says. In the sixth parak of the Shmona Prakim, he says he's quoting philosophers. He doesn't tell you who, but the assumption is that it's Aristotle. The philosophers presented a certain viewpoint towards this issue. The question is as follows. Who's on a higher level? Who's on a higher spiritual plane? Who is more morally perfected? The person who has a desire to do a certain immoral act and through his intellect imposes restrictions on that desire and controls himself or herself, right? Is that person greater? Or someone who has no desire for something morally repugnant at all?
I could have passed that to you.
Okay, let me ask you, who's on a higher level? Who's on a higher spiritual plane?
The first question.
Well, I'm sorry?
The first one.
Why do you say that?
Well, according to the Dvar Torah that our rabbi gave yesterday,
yeah.
That would be the case.
Okay.
Because he talked about Rav Chaim Berliner, who claimed to be both lazy and cruel.
Okay.
And it's hard to imagine, you know, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik being lazy with the the whole Torah world.
Right.
Basically learns on his shita now.
Right.
And he was actually very famous for the amount of chesed that he did. But he claimed that he was a cruel person.
By nature.
By nature, and he was simply
overcame
that.
But they worked
that
at himself.
Right. Okay. It's interesting. Okay. So, let's
my taina is that he was just sitting in a possibly high standard.
Okay, but why is that? That person is greater, yeah.
Isn't there Gemara on this, where they talk about a tzaddik versus a bal tshuva, and who's... like somebody like who's higher?
But the Gemara does mention that b'makom bali tshuva omdin ein tzadikim gmurin yicholim la'amod, that in the place where a bal tshuva stands, but that may be relating to other aspects though, in terms of a bal tshuva, yes, having to work harder to get to where he is, and therefore having put in that effort. But where is he now? That's what I'm asking.
Well, isn't the idea with a bal tshuva that they had a desire, or maybe it's not a desire, but it's a way of life, and then through their intellect or through whatever, they overcame that, and now they've...
Let me ask you, does the Baal Teshuva still have that desire, and he simply is overcoming it constantly, or he's totally removed that desire from his being?
Wow. I don't know.
It depends on the
Baal Teshuva. Right. Well, it depends on the Baal Teshuva, but I'm saying that Baal Teshuva that Chazal is referring to, that is greater than a Tzadik Gamur. Where is that Baal Teshuva, where is he holding?
So I would say that he's higher than the Tzadik, according to the Gemara. So I would say the person who overcomes his desire...
Maybe he's higher than the Tzadik only once he's eradicated those desires.
Who says the Tzadik is
eradicated, or is it the struggle?
Who says the Tzadik has eradicated the desires? Okay, this is a good question.
Yeah? Does Tzadikim have to take care of the desires all the time?
Right.
A lot of times Tzadikim have... It talks about Rav Moshe saying that he has to overcome very difficult things.
Right.
On a
Moshe
regular basis.
Also like that. They quote Moshe as being very mean, actually. When they saw him, these people couldn't believe this was the leader, that he was he did so much chesed.
Right.
Because, look of a mean.
And indeed, Chazal do make a comment to the effect of the greater the tzaddik, the greater the yitzhara.
Yeah.
Okay, there is such a comment in Chazal. The Rambam is not so sure. Okay, in the Shmona Prakim, in the sixth parak, the Rambam is not so sure. He says that the philosophers, and he seems to accept this opinion, the philosophers have stated that somebody who is Moshel al Yitzro, what the Rambam terms it, someone who is able to have dominion and control over those desires, is certainly a great person in the eyes of the philosophers. But somebody who's perfected himself to the extent where he only desires things which are good, where he doesn't desire things that are morally repugnant, that person is even higher. That was the opinion of the philosophers that the Rambam was quoting. Okay? And if you look on page 2, in the first box on top there, the third section, I'm sorry I didn't number them akoros, but there's a pasuk in Mishlei, Perachaf Aleph, that the Rambam uses to support this opinion in the philosophers. The Rambam quotes this pasuk. He says, Nefesh rasha ivitara lo yuchan ve'inav re'ehu. Right? The soul of a wicked one desires evil. Okay, so he says Shlomo HaMelech was of this opinion as well, and he says this is the opinion of the philosophers. Someone who desires evil yet overcomes that evil, certainly he's laudable. But someone who is able to integrate that decision, let's say, into his personality to the extent where he no longer desires things which are evil, that's even higher. Okay? However, this presents a problem. If you look on the top of this same box on page 2,
it's not for us to judge from the outside because we can't
we don't know
who has the
I'm not passing judgment on anything.
Who has
I'm
the
simply,
more difficult
right.
desires.
Right now we're talking theory, right? Right. We're talking okay. which one...
Theory.
For us, this is going to be important. Why? It's going to be important in terms of where's our orientation? What's the end goal?
Right.
Right. Is the end goal simply to... Should we be satisfied with feeling that we still have a desire for something that's wrong, yet we've grown to the ability to control it? Or should we continue on even further, let's say, to totally change our desires and our priorities? Okay? That's why it's going to be important for us. If you look on the top of page 2, the pasuk in Vayikra Perachov says in Parshat Kedoshim, "V'hiyitem li kedoshim ki kadosh ani Hashem, v'avdil etchem min ha'amim liot li. You shall be holy unto me, for I am the Lord, and for I the Lord am holy, and I have set you apart from the peoples, that you shall be mine." The Sifra, which is a Medrash Halacha, seems to fly in the face of the principle established by the philosophers that the Rambam was quoting. The Sifra says as follows: Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah Omer. Minayan shelo yomar adam e efshi levol shatnez e efshi leechol basar chazir e efshi levol min levol al ha'erva aval efshi ma aseh ve'avish b'shemayim gazar leikach. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says, how do we know that a person should not say, I don't desire to wear shatnez, I don't even desire to eat pork, right? I don't desire to have illicit relations with somebody I'm prohibited to. Rather, what should a person say? Efshi uma aseh ve'avish b'shemayim gazar leikach. Rather, I desire to do it, yet what can I do? Hashem, my Father in heaven, commanded me not to do it.
That's a Rashi.
Okay, yeah, Rashi does quote this, 1 second. How do we know this? Talmud lomar, va'avdil etchem min ha'amim lihiyot li. Right? I have set you apart from the peoples. It's going to be key that Chazal learned this principle from this pasuk. Keep that in mind. The fact that we're set apart from the peoples of the world, from the other nations, means that we should value what Chazal lay out here, meaning we should value maintaining the desire and yet deciding to overcome it because Hashem commanded us to do so. Nimtza porish min ha'avera u'mekabel alav ma'achut shemayim. When a person does that, he separates himself from avera, and at the same time, he's mekabel ma'achut shemayim. As opposed to if a person simply doesn't want to do an avera because, right, I don't want to eat pork because to me it's disgusting, it's not healthy. So if I refuse to eat pork because I think it's unhealthy, so of course I'm withholding myself from doing an avera, but have I incorporated Kabbalah's Omah Hushamayim into that? No. So Chazal see an added aspect, it's an added gain to saying the reason I'm doing it is because Hashem commanded me. So Chazal take this really the opposite approach of what the philosophers have laid out, and the Rambam is kind of bothered by this tension between the two.
It's consistent with how Hashem started B'nai Yisrael, though, with how he waited for Yaakov. I think he was waiting for a certain character type, mm-hmm. a certain being, in order to start the Jewish people. It seemed like, you know, we're called B'nai Yisrael, we're not called B'nai Yitzchak, we're not called B'nai Abraham, right?
Why is that specific to Yaakov?
I think because of his character. I think there was certain something embodied within its character that Hashem felt like, okay, this is the beginning of B'nai Yisrael.
Okay, maybe. So let's see, back on page 1. Let's look on the bottom of page 1. This is the excerpt from the 6th parak of the Shemona Prakim. I'm sorry, I don't have it in English. But we'll read through it and see how the Rambam resolves this difficulty. On the one hand, the philosophers and the Rambam agrees that he thinks the Pasuk in Mishlei supports it, that the opinion is that one who has no desire for evil is on a higher level, yet Chazal and that Sifro we just saw say that, yes, it's better to have the desire and overcome it because Hashem commanded. Yeah, just a quick question.
But just about this whole kind of framework, do these things have to be exclusive of each other? They're not really like... I always view this the same thing on a spectrum, meaning somebody who may be lower on the spectrum, so they have to work on their desires. But then once you've refined yourself, you're not working on your desires, you may come to the point where, so now I'm refining myself on a higher level. And it's not that
Which one is higher, though?
But it's almost... I don't know if you can even... I don't know if that question is even askable. Just because if it's all the same thing, it's just where are you holding on the scale? At what point, you know, one's just a refinement of the other. So I get you. Know.
Right. It could be that the order, you know, depending on the person, depending on the avera, let's say, it could be that the order in which a person works on himself or herself could be flipped for different people. Whatever it is, maybe a person starts off working on, you know, eradicating the desire completely. But then it's kind of hard to imagine that a
those
person
desires
would
then change. So meaning, like, let's say somebody who, I love eating cheeseburgers, so eventually, let's say they overcome it, so then the desire is not cheeseburgers. It's like, I think Rav Dessler talks about, like, there's a constant battle going on, and the fight is with what you're dealing with. Whatever's behind you, you've conquered that. And whatever's in front of you, there are things that are, like, beyond your limit. You can't get there. But the idea is, as you move forward, you know, so you're taking on more. So there's some issues that, I mean, like no one's going to say, oh, Yisher Koach, like, you didn't kill anybody. That's not my taiva. Like I don't have an issue. But somebody might say,
but maybe Chazal are saying in that Sifra that it's worthwhile to keep those skeletons in the closet. Right? Maybe that's what Chazal are saying, essentially. Chazal are saying that it's better for a person stops eating cheeseburgers. So you say, yes, over time you may lose the desire to eat cheeseburgers. Maybe according to that Sifra, it's better to somehow work on keeping that desire. Therefore, the reason you're refraining from cheeseburgers incorporates Ol Malchut Shemayim.
But I would argue that once you have conquered that desire to eat cheeseburgers and it's in the closet, it's not even an issue, then your desires become at a much higher level. So
for cheeseburgers or for something else?
No, for something else. The thing is, it's like, okay, that's something I've already dealt with. I've overcome it. Now my cheeseburger is something else. Now my cheeseburger might be maintaining a certain sort of concentration while I'm done.
Right, but then that's a different avera, I would argue, and that may reflect a different value. Whatever value the Torah is trying to convey by prohibiting cheeseburgers is lost in, you know, working on oneself and having kavanah and davening.
I think it's the same principle, just applied to different things.
Okay, maybe. Let's see what the Rambam says. Maybe we'll come back to it. Yeah, just and then we'll...
If you're claiming that it's good to maintain the taivas for things that are forbidden, then perhaps bakos are a good idea.
I think bakos are a wonderful idea, but especially in salad. But, okay, I haven't had bakos in ages, but I used to love them. Anyway, so look... Yeah,
quick question. In the Sifra, please tell me, how are you translating Yishu in the book?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you translate Yishu?
I don't desire. I'd rather not.
So I think my reading of the Sifra, what I'm saying is that even if you whether you have a desire or not, it's better to say it's a tzivui. Because of Va'adil Eschem, that whether you have a desire or not, Ma'asa.
But they're saying. Minayin shelo yomar. Minayin shelo yomar Adam e ifshi lo voshan is e ifshi lo achol baser chazir e ifshi lo vo ala erva. Aval ifshi ma. Meaning they're contrasting the two. They're saying it's better to say ifshi ma esev avisha b'shemayim gazar leikach.
Ifshi means what again, please?
That I'd rather, I desire, I want.
Isn't it the Aramaic for Efshel? Efshel and Yevshel?
It's possible.
I can imagine doing it.
Okay, I think, meaning certainly the way the Rambam, we'll see. The Rambam, do I have the Rambam quoting this here? I think either it's here or it's in the part right before that I left out. Let's go on. Let's see what the Rambam says and how he approaches resolving this issue. The Rambam on page 1 on the bottom says as follows. Lufi ha-muvan, mipshate shnei ha-dvarim u-bitkhilat ha-machshava, הרי שני המאמרים סותרים זה את זה. These two values that we just articulated, right, desiring yet overcoming versus eradicating the desire, they seem to contradict. ואין הדבר כן, he says there's no contradiction, אלא שניהם אמת. ואין ביניהם מחלוקת כלל. How is that possible? How is there no מחלוקת ביניהם? וזה שהראות אשר הן אצל הפילוסופים ראות, הן אשר אמרו שמי שלא יתאווה להן יותר טוב ממי שיתאווה להן וימשול בנפשו מהן. Behem hadvarim hamefursamim etzel bnei adam kulam shehem ra'ot. The things for which the philosophers were referring to, that it's better to eradicate the desire, they were referring to things that are well known amongst people to be evil. For example, shvichut damim, gneva, gezel, hona'a, vehezek l'misha lo hara, right, damaging someone who's undeserving, gmul ra l'metiv, what we call kafui tova, giving, returning evil to one who did good for you, zilzul harim, right, degrading one's parents to chil to be'ela. Things that we call mishpatim, things that are unknown to all, that are reasonable to all peoples, those are the things which the philosophers were referring to that it's better to eradicate the desire for. V'hen ha-mitzvot asher yomru aleihen ha-chachamim aleihem ha-shalom dvarim she'ilm aleih lo nuchtivu ruim heim lekol tvan. These are the things we refer to as mishpatim. V'karun k'tzat chachmenu ha'achronim asher chalu choli ha'medabrim ha'mitzvot ha'sichliot. Right, some of our chachamim term these mitzvot ha'sichliot, mitzvot of the intellect, excuse me. And some of our Rambam seems to not like this term. He says that some people call it this because they attain the sickness of the choli ha'medabrim, of those who speak a lot. He's referring possibly to some Christian philosophers, and he thinks that they've had influence, Muslim philosophers, that they've had influence on Chachmei Yisrael. It's really not important for our purposes. Ve'en safek ki ha'nefesh asher titaveh ledaber mehem v'tishtokek elav hi nefesh chasera, ki ha'nefesh ha'mu'ula lo titaveh ledaber me'el ha'ra'ot klav lo titzte'er behimana'a mehen. He says, undoubtedly, the person who doesn't desire those things at all is on a higher level. The person who works on himself, herself, to the point where she doesn't desire to steal, doesn't desire at all to degrade the parents, whatever it is, things that are fall into the category of mishpatim, things that might have an objective moral component to them, those are things which is better to eradicate completely from our desires. Aval ha'dvarim asher amru chachamim shamushel b'nafsho mehem yoter tov v'scharo yoter gadol hena mitzvot ha'shimiyot v'ze nachon ki om alei ha'tora lo yura ot klal lefikach amru shetzarich ha'adam laniach nafsho ala avatam lo yasim mon omehem ela ha'torah. But the things that are chukim, mitzvot shimiyot, that we only hear from our tradition, things that are chukim, it's better, what Chazal say in the Sifra, it's better to want to perform those mitzvot, to overcome those challenges, purely because of the fact that Hashem commanded them to us. Is there anything inherently wrong, morally corrupt about eating pig? No. It's because Hashem commanded it to us. So it may not be such a value to say, I have no desire to eat pig. Maybe it's better to keep that desire to eat pig. Say it looks delicious. And I'm not going to do it because Hashem commanded me. V'hitbonen, the last paragraph. V'hitbonen b'chachmatam. The Rambam says, look at their wisdom, Chazal's wisdom. Aleihem shalom. B'mehim shilu. What are their examples that they gave? Shehu lo amar, lo yomar adam, e'efshi laharogot ha'nefesh, e'efshi lignov, e'efshi lechazev, ela efshi umah v'chule. In that sifra, the examples of Chazal weren't things like murder, theft, etc. They brought things which were only chukim. Vaser b'chalav, levisha shatnez, v'arayot. Oh, okay, I was waiting. Someone should have been, people should have been upset faster than that. Right. Right. Chazal, gilui arayot. In that Gemara in Yuma, gilui arayot was put in the category of mishpatim. The Rambam here puts it in the category of chukim. That's very surprising, okay? So, let's
come... can't they be a synthesis as part of back to you should be separate and mm-hmm. doing these chukim, kashrut, that keeps you separate. You can't eat with your neighbor.
Right.
You wear different clothing.
So how would this answer the question about arayot that the Rambam includes it in chukim here?
Because that makes you kind of... in that sense, it has a logic to it.
But he's saying they're chukim. He's saying that arayot are in the category of chukim.
I know,
things
but
that don't...
one says it's chukim and one says it's,
right.
it's mish.
So we'll have to see for what purposes it may be in both categories. Okay, let's hold off on that just until we finish. Ve'elam mitzvot uchiyotze mehen asher hen yikru Hashem chukotav. Ve'amru chukim shechakakti lecha in rashut lecha rashut leharher bahem ve'umot ha'olam meshivim aleihem ve'hasatan mekadreg aleihem kegon para aduma siyer mishaleach v'chule. Right, these are chukim, what Chazal referred to as chukim. Ve'otan asher karun achronim sichliot yikru mitzvot. Things that later sages called mitzvot of the intellect, the Torah also terms mitzvot. It's a synonymous term with chukim. And in fact, Rashi in this past week's parsha also, he sees the term mitzvot and mishpatim as being synonymous in contrast to chukim. So the Rambam resolves the conflict just to summarize as follows. He says the mitzvot for which we should try to eradicate our desires completely and align our moral conscience with the mitzvot themselves, those are about mishpatim. Right? Murder, theft, etc. All things which have a universal moral component to them. But things which are, we only know through our tradition, which we would never have legislated without the Torah commanding us, those are things maybe it's better, if, according to the Sifra, to maintain the desire and simply perform the mitzvot because Hashem commanded it to us. Now, it's troublesome that the Rambam includes illicit sexual relations here in the category of chukim, and in the Gemara, it's included in the category of mishpatim. Not only textually, but logically, why would the Rambam include it in chukim? I would think that gilui arayot, etc.,
It's a very reasonable, certainly if you would have asked me, I would have thought that belongs in the category of Mishpatim, not to have a, you know, wanton society that's completely morally corrupt in the sexual realm. So why would the Rambam include it in Chukim? So,
does he define it differently?
It's hard to imagine he would. I mean, our rabbit are pretty clear cut. It seems to be pretty clear cut. So the Rav Yosef Kapach, who translated the Morne Nevuchim into the Hebrew in the 20th century, originally from the Arabic, he's a great Rambam scholar. So he offers a suggestion. You remember we mentioned last week briefly in chapter 26 in the third parak, the Rambam said as follows. He says, yes, all mitzvahs have reasons. However, I will now tell you what intelligent persons ought to believe in this respect, namely that each commandment has necessarily a cause as far as its general character is concerned and serves a certain object. But as regards its details, we hold that it has no ulterior object. The Rambam says, in terms of understanding that there's a reason for mitzvot, there's a distinction between the mitzvah on a general level, on a global perspective, and then the nitty-gritty details of each mitzvah. It may be true that each mitzvah has a reason, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the details, specific halachot, have a specific reason. He gives an example as follows. Korbanot. Right, we're not going to talk about korbanot yet. Hopefully we'll get to it in more detail. He says, the reason, there's certainly the korbanot have a cause, have a reason that's useful. However, the fact that the Torah commands us, let's say, for a specific korban, to bring a sheep versus a goat, or vice versa, says that may not have so much significance. Why? Let's say the Torah commands us to bring a sheep. So we ask, well, why not a goat? Yeah. Well, had the Torah commanded a goat, we would have asked, well, why not a sheep? It says it had to be one of them. Right? It had to be something. So since it had to be something, the Torah chose one. It doesn't necessarily mean there's such significance to each of the details.
And they felt the need to give a specific detail so people don't change it.
There had to be uniformity.
If it says to give a goat, I'm going to give a cow.
Right, there had to be uniformity.
Right.
And Rav Kapach suggests, maybe this is what the Rambam is getting at for Arayot as well. He says, maybe that Gemara in Yuma is talking about, yes, in general, the concept of Gilur Arayot. Illicit sexual relations, it should be forbidden on a very, very reasonable level. We can't have wanton sexual behavior in society. That's a mishpat. What he talks about in Pirkei Avot, b'prateha arayot, shine esru aleinu batorah. That's talking about details. Why the Torah only forbids midoraisa specific relations and not others. For example, kagon bat ishto uvat ochoto, shezeh asura v'zeh mutaret. Bat ishto, the daughter of one's wife, is midoraisa forbidden, is one of the arayot. But bat achoto, a niece, is not forbidden. Okay? Well, why is that? That's a little harder to discern as to why it's so reasonable, why it makes so much sense, why it's a mishpat that it should be that way.
Well, according to sociobiologist, I'm serious.
Yeah.
I was just reading E.W. Wilson. It's just too close.
The niece.
The daughter.
I mean, the daughter of the wife.
Yeah.
Daughter of the wife is not necessarily the husband's daughter.
Well, it's not necessarily your own daughter, right. But the emotions and genetics that would be involved are too close.
Well, there are no genetics involved.
No, but competition between wife and daughter.
Right.
You know,
okay.
What if the wife dies? Then the fact that she has a daughter from a previous marriage.
I know, but then
there's no genetics, whereas the daughter.
I know, but then still have the. I know, but then there's the emotions of having been with. Mother or whatever.
Right. Okay, listen.
I'm just quoting him.
It doesn't mean,
totally
and the Rambam concedes, in chapter 26, the Rambam concedes that yes, many details are open to interpretation. He's not saying categorically details have no meaning, because he, in fact, in that same chapter says, yeah, I can give reason for many of the details, and he endeavors to do so.
Right.
But maybe that's what the Rambam is referring to here, that Gilur Arayot has aspects to it also, which are chok, even though as on a general scale, the concept of Gila Arayot itself is a mishpat. So that's one possibility.
But isn't the reverse of the one's niece, an uncle, a niece can marry, but an aunt and a nephew cannot?
So why does it make why does it make sense? Right? It's not so logical, right? So that's one possibility that Rav Kapach offers. I haven't seen any better answers to why the Rambam includes Arayot in Chukim here, especially since in the Gemara itself it's included in the category of Mishpatim. Okay, so let's go on now to the next part of the Shir. We're talking about how do we know whether something is a Chok and Mishpat. The Rambam gives us very clear guidelines, which we're just going to do briefly, and then for the remainder of the Shir, we're going to look at one mitzvah specifically and see how we navigate approaching that mitzvah, the mitzvah that was brought up, I think you brought up last week, the mitzvah of Shatnez. Okay, we're going to take a look at the mitzvah of Shatnez, which the Gemara itself, right, and the Sifra itself, and the Rambam also, all included in the category of Chok. Right, the fact that we can't wear a garment of wool and linen, certainly there doesn't seem to be anything objectively morally wrong to it. Right, if I see someone in the street, a non-Jew, wearing a garment of wool and linen, I'm not going to look down on him and say that he's a bad person. Right?
Probably can't even figure it out.
Right, I probably can't even figure it out. But you know, let's say I happen to know. I'm not going to think he's a bad person. I may not like, you know, I think he has poor style or whatever it is. But that's not a moral question. That's a personal question.
So wool and linen look nice together.
Right, wool and linen look
most
nice.
Most of the fabric. And it's...
So let's see on page 2, section 2 in the Shir. The Gemara in Bava Kamma has an interesting comment. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says as follows. Amar Rav Yehuda, Hai man debay le mehavi chasida le kai mili vinezikin, Rava amar mili de avot ve amri la mili de brachot. Rav Yehuda says as follows. One who wants to be a chasid. What's a chasid? Someone translate chasida for me? Someone who wants to be chasida? What?
Pious.
Okay, pious. What does piety mean?
Extra careful in mitzvahs.
Extra careful in mitzvahs? What do you mean by extra?
Stringent.
He's really
machmir.
Machmir.
Okay. Machmir. So that's what I wanted to bring out. No. So it doesn't.
It's not really what Chassidus
means. Right. It doesn't necessarily mean stringent.
Take this.
Okay.
So I mean, oftentimes it may happen to be. Oftentimes it may happen to be that stringency is in line with Chassidut, but oftentimes that's not the case. Okay, Chassidut means, as outlined in Pirkei Avot, Lifnim Mishur Tadin, which means not beyond the letter of the law, as it's often mistranslated, but within, between the lines. Right? Between the letter of the law. What does it mean, between the letter of the law? Understanding the spirit of the law, understanding the mitzvah, and acting in accordance with the spirit of the law, even in cases where the letter of the law may not require it. Okay?
Would you say that's what pious means?
In terms of how, I believe in terms of how Pirkei Avot uses it, and I think how the Gemara is using it here, as we'll see,
why I'm saying it. Is that not a good translation?
Is what?
The word pious.
So I don't know, is piety a good translation? I don't know because I don't really know enough about the word piety to really say whether that's a good translation or not.
The word piety is used very much in Christianity.
Right, so it has certain connotations which
because
I don't know.
Because they don't have the word mom.
Can I give an example?
Let's just hold off right now because I just want to finish. We are running out of time. The Rambam says, and this is in chapter 28, I put the text here just so we don't have to flip around in our book so much, on page 314. We're not going to read the whole paragraph because it's long, but it's extremely important. He says, the reason of a commandment, whether positive or negative, is clear, and its usefulness evident if. How do we know whether something is a chok or a mishpat? He says, we know it's a mishpat if it fulfills one of the three conditions. One, the numbers here are my own additions. One, if it directly tends to remove injustice. For example, let's say the prohibition to steal. Two, it teaches good conduct that furthers the well-being of society. For example, let's say, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Also contributes to something physical, contributes to a moral society. Or three, it imparts truth which ought to be believed either on its own merit or as being indispensable for facilitating the removal of injustice or the teaching of good morals.
Okay, could you repeat three again, please? I'm sorry.
To impart a truth which ought to be believed either on its own merit or as being indispensable for facilitating the removal of injustice or the teaching of good morals. This line, this first sentence in this paragraph, is critical in understanding the Rambam's approach to Tamei Mitzvot. You can read it again later, read the whole paragraph later, I highly recommend it, but he says, something is a mishpat if it directly removes injustice, if it contributes to a behavior, an orientation towards society that improves society, or if it contributes to a proper belief. That third category is broken into two subcategories. Proper belief can mean it's it's a proper belief on its own merit, maybe such as belief in God, an objective truth. And the second subcategory, it's a belief that facilitates the removal of injustice. Similar to the previous categories. What's an example of that? The Rambam gives us an example that say the belief that God gets angry at sinners. Now, believing that God gets angry at sinners, is that belief objectively true? No. Because to say that God gets angry, the Rambam would argue, is not objectively true at all, because God can't have anger. Anger implies there's a change in an emotional state, and a change in an emotional state implies imperfection of the being in which it's changed. Okay? Because if something is perfect, there can be no change, and that's how the Rambam understands about God. Right? Not for now. But it's really objectively it's incorrect to believe that God gets angry. God doesn't actually get angry. But for our purposes, it's correct to believe that God is angry. Why? Because if we believe that God gets angry with sinners, that motivates us to act in a morally correct way. So that could be another reason for a proper belief as well. Okay? So I would really highly recommend reading the rest of this paragraph. Let's now take a look on page 3 at Shatnez. And with this we'll finish up. We're running out of time. The Rambam says, we saw in a couple places, the Rambam himself had said Shatnez is in the category of Chok. But later in the third Chelek, the Rambam divides mitzvot into 14 subcategories. Okay? He says there are 14 categories of mitzvot. It's very interesting that the 14 categories of mitzvot also appears in the 14 books of the Mishneh Torah. Right? There are 14 books in the Mishneh Torah, and the way the Rambam breaks that work up is parallel, yet somewhat different to the way he breaks up the categories of mitzvot in the Mor Nebuchim. One day I want to sit down and try to compare and contrast the 14 different categories and try to figure out why the Rambam has some differences, but I haven't done it, and I don't really know that there necessarily is an easy answer. But the Rambam, despite saying that Shatnez is a chok, he says in Mor Nebuchim, he says, we have explained in our large work, meaning the Mishneh Torah, that it is prohibited to round the corners of the head and to mar the corners of the beard because it was custom of idolatrous priests. Cutting the payas, using a razor for men. Right? This prohibition does not apply to women. It's one of only three mitzvot lotaseh that does not apply to women, very interestingly. He says, the reason why the Torah legislated against it, because it was the practice of the idolatrous priests. For the same reason, the wearing of garments made of linen and wool is prohibited. The heathen priests adorned themselves with garments containing vegetable and animal material, whilst they held in their hand a seal made of mineral. He says it was an idolatrous practice, and this is a very short excerpt from a very long chapter the Rambam talks about in the category of idolatry. That the Rambam had access to all these old idolatrous books, and he found there that they actually had the practice, there was an idolatrous magical practice to kind of hold something, to wear garments made of wool and linen, or vegetable and animal material, and to hold something in the hand made of mineral, thereby unifying all the different components of nature and perform some sort of idolatrous practice with that. So the Rambam says, therefore, it was prohibited for us to wear shatnez. Now, I don't know about you, this reason doesn't really do it for me.
Because we're going to walk around with
a
mineral.
Right. We're not really walking around with a mineral in our hand. Okay, but even let's say we might. Hold off. We're running out of time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we're just going to hold the questions. But let's say we would. Still, it doesn't really, I don't relate to it so much. But remember what we said in our earlier shiurim, that tamei mitzvot, just like flavor, just like tam, you need to find something that's more personal, more relatable. The Rambam says, in the Sefer HaMitzvot, by the way, he says as well, same concept, that's what I have over here in the Hebrew, that it was because of Avodah Zarah, and he said this was known in terms of the Komrei Mitzrayim, the priests of Egypt, that they used to wear wool and linen garments for certain rituals, etc. Fine. What I want to really get to, and with this we'll end, is Rav Kook. Rav Kook offers a fascinating explanation.